Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you are based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com. This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
So here's a time check for you. It is 22:06, and bringing us the Israel report today is Lieutenant Colonel in the Reserves Maurice Hirsch, the former Director of Military Prosecutions for the Israel Defense Forces and Senior Legal Analyst at NGO Monitor. Lieutenant Colonel Maurice Hirsch, great to chat to you again.
Hi, Simon. How are you?
I am well, thank you. And been looking at the headlines coming out of Israel this afternoon and struck by the fact that it's unusual that we read about sexual abuse cases, but two on the front page today. One was Ram Breslavsky, the hostage released from Gaza, from Hamas, and the other one, Elizabeth Tsurkov, in Iraq, I believe. Are we talking about weaponization of sex against Israelis? Is this a new phenomenon we're talking about here?
So I don't know if it's necessarily we can say it's a new phenomena. It's something which has definitely been very, very prominent. It was a specific and a stressed part of the October 7 massacre. It is part of Islamic traditional warfare to sexually abuse, rape your victims. And so it's not necessarily unsurprising to see that.
That is interesting. And obviously, as time goes by, so the hostages will speak more freely about the experience, and probably in all likelihood, more of these stories will come to light.
Without question. I think that many of the hostages, some of the stories we've already heard, some of the stories have been told, but will probably never be exposed, because the hostages obviously went through so much of their own personal trauma. And until they can really move on, or at least start moving on, it's perfectly natural that they wouldn't necessarily want to tell the world what exact horrors they went through whilst in the hands of these genocidal terrorists. Horrors we know they did experience.
As per usual, I have a number of issues that I've jotted down, and I'm going to go through them one by one. But if there's anything breaking or you think that's more important or that you'd like to discuss that's made news in Israel today, please feel free to just, take the mic and run with it. The next issue that interested me was a report in the Times of Israel saying that Yair Lapid has torn into the corrupt World Zionist Organization leadership. Those are his words. What's the backstory there? Why is he as upset as he appears to be?
Here it appears to be just another one of the small petty politics that unfortunately goes on in Israel. As we know, there were just recently elections for the World Zionist Congress, and they're meeting. All of the different delegations were meeting now for the first time in their new form, and there has been some type of criticism from all of the different political sides as to who won how many seats and which seats and who's getting appointed to which jobs, and obviously there is some talk about also something together with Yair Netanyahu and some type of a position that he may or may not have been given. All of these things are unfortunately serving all of the politicians to seek the division that they have so much been trying to sow, even through the war. Unfortunately, Yair Lapid has never missed an opportunity. Unfortunately, he's like the Palestinians, has never missed an opportunity to talk about unity and to talk about how we move forward going on after the war. And unfortunately, all he can find is small politics and petty complaints. And really, that's unfortunately where he is trying to position himself, possibly for upcoming elections as someone who is really different when I think most of the population are just fed up with him. He never had the decency to join the war cabinet and to support the war effort. He sat on the back benches, sniping at the heels of the government, complaining and moaning, and rather than doing anything constructive. And I think this is probably nothing more than that.
The other issue that I thought was very interesting was this issue of a proposed media bill. The question I had for you was, to what extent would it affect freedom of expression in Israel? Because from my very naive reading of the little bit I read, it almost seems to be democratizing the process of obtaining a license. Have I misread this?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. I think it's the new legislation is meant to expose who exactly controls the media in Israel, and to ensure that those people are front and forward, that we know exactly whose agenda is being pushed in any of these different so-called news outlets, and that's something which I think can definitely improve freedom of speech in Israel. It's something that strengthens a democracy when you know who's behind which agenda. And it's not something which is pitched as being neutral and unbiased, but where rarely it is completely biased, and it's being funded by a certain a group or part of the population that have a very clear, and in Israel sometimes all too often, an anti-government agenda, an anti-Netanyahu agenda. So this is a reform which has been, I think, a long time coming. And it's something which is now moving forward, and I think for the better of Israel's democracy.
The other story that I found of interest this afternoon was it appears that Netanyahu is trying to push through a revised conscription bill, this one apparently having the support of the Haredim. I never thought they would support any bill whatsoever. What makes this one palatable?
So what appears to be the situation now is that the Haredim have managed to persuade everyone that they should continue to get a free pass in Israel. They shouldn't be required to contribute anything to Israel's security, apart from the importance of sitting and learning Torah, which obviously those who are actually doing that should definitely be allowed to stay and do that. But unfortunately, that isn't the case with most of the Haredi population, and they're just enjoying the exemption from military service simply because they wear black suits and white shirts, and really, there in and of itself, it's based on the political power that they hold and wield. As we know, and as I'm sure your audience knows, Israel has a parliament with a proportional representation. There are many different little parties. The Haredi parties hold anything between 14 to 16, sometimes 17, sometimes more, of the seats in the Knesset, and they often use their power as the balance of power to form a government. Either one of the sides really needs the Haredi parties. And so they are really abusing the system as it is in order to maintain their status quo, and unfortunately ignoring even the rebuke of Moses, of Moshe, to the tribes, Reuven, Menashe, and Gad, when they said that they didn't want to go into the land of Israel. And he said to them, "What do you think? You're going to stay here on the east side of the Jordan River, and while your brothers go out to war?" And they obviously clarified that that wasn't their intention, but that's exactly it. The Haredim are sitting around, those who are learning, God bless them, and those who are not doing anything productive should be going to the army. And so this bill seems to be more of a capitulation to their demands and requirements rather than anything substantial that will see them coming into the
army. I understand the realities of Israeli politics. I understand the need to keep a coalition together. But I would have thought the vast majority of Netanyahu's base is actually furious with that approach. They're the ones who've suffered the most. The Dati Lumi have suffered the highest casualties in the last 2 years in Gaza.
I think you're absolutely right. I think there's a tremendous disparity between the need to preserve the need, in inverted commas, to preserve a distorted government base, as opposed to, I think, the desire of most of the country that would like to see the Haredim coming into the army. There's no reason why the Dati Leumi world goes into the army and the Haredim don't. There's no reason in the world. Their argument is that going into the army will destroy the world of Torah. Well, so I asked you, if an 18-year-old who's been a Haredi all of his life cannot suffer 3 years going out into the normal world to defend Israel, to defend his country, to defend the Jewish people without losing entirely his religion, then I fear that the basis for his belief is fundamentally flawed, and there's nothing that prevents any of the Haredim from doing their military service, and then at age 21, 22, whatever it is, going back and spending the rest of their lives in yeshiva. I think that this whole argument is I apologize for being so outspoken on this and less of a commentator rather than giving my position. But it's something which I don't think the Israeli public can tolerate or will tolerate for much longer. And it's a shame that the Haredi political leadership doesn't make that change, even in the face of the fact that, I'm sure your listeners saw that last week on Thursday, there was a big Haredi demonstration against the recruitment. Mm. And at the same time, at the Kotel, there was a swearing-in ceremony of the new battalion, of the new, I think even brigade, of Haredi soldiers who had chosen to come into the army. So there is that desire, and really that should be strengthened by the Haredi leadership. There is an option now. I don't think until recently the army was really equipped to deal with recruiting the Haredim, but much has been done in the last 2 years. And that situation has changed, and they need to go into the army.
A very final issue for you here today. It's literally 5 minutes old on the Times of Israel, so this is fresh. Apparently, the IDF has launched waves of significant strikes on Hezbollah in South Lebanon today after warnings.
That's exactly what I was about to say to you.
I just don't understand why they are managing to reconstitute themselves when the Lebanese government has indicated they should disarm.
Well, so the Lebanese government has been talking the talk, but not walking the walk. They have been saying, we are moving to disarm Hezbollah. We have decided to disarm Hezbollah, but in fact, they actually haven't done very much at all. They face a fundamental problem, which their main mechanism to actually implement the disarmament of Hezbollah is the Lebanese army. 60% of the Lebanese army is Shiite. And so you have this inherent problem that the people meant to be disbanding Hezbollah are probably more associated with Hezbollah than they are with the government. And so what we saw today was and what really sparked this whole event was a letter from Hezbollah to the Lebanese government declaring their desire, their intention to carry on regrouping and rearming and to carry on with their so-called resistance against Israel. And that's really one of the final straws that broke the camel's back. We've seen a series of attacks on Hezbollah over this entire period and to prevent them from regrouping. But this is really now an openly declared intention to breach all of the agreements and to continue attacking Israel. So that's why we have now launched this tremendous attack on Hezbollah. And they will have to pay the price, and Lebanon will have to pay the price for wasting a year, over a year now already, of the opportunity that they had to disarm Hezbollah when Hezbollah was really on its knees. A year ago, Hezbollah was on its knees. Sure, Hassan beepers. Nasrallah and the top leadership had been taken out. The beepers destroyed. The Lebanese government had really a golden opportunity, and despite all of the support from the US, They have again squandered that opportunity, and now they're going to pay the price.
Lieutenant Colonel in the Reserves, Maurice Hirsch, we're out of time. Thank you so much for your input this afternoon.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.